Welcome back to the History of the Barbarians podcast, season one, episode number nine, titled As the Tvingi Turn. My name is Josh Hirschman, and we are here to continue our journey through the barbarian history story with our Goths. This week, we'll be looking at the Goths in the mid-4th century after the peace with the Roman Emperor Constantine I. When we last left off in our story, the Tvingi Goths were fighting with Constantine the Great and became federati of the Roman Empire. The time period from 332 to the 360s is going to be marked by peace with the empire, but that does not mean the Tvingi will just be sitting around waiting for the Romans to call for some troops. The questions that are driving our story today are what the Tvingi were doing during this time period and what made a Tvingi Goth. So the Tvingi Goths had just been defeated by the legions of Constantine and were forced to sign a treaty or a fatus with the Romans. The Tvingi judge, Ariaric, had to pledge his troops and his son to the Romans. In return, the Romans would pay the Tvingi an annual payment and allow them to conduct their business as long as the Danube border region was quiet. The Tvingi took advantage of this arrangement and decided to go on the offensive to spread their influence. The Sarmatians that had called on the Romans to save them were still living in the Banat, which is in western Romania, parts of modern-day Serbia and Hungary. The Tvingi, under the Reich Gibberic, attacked these Sarmatians to punish them for their previous behavior. They plundered the area and moved on. Gibberic then moved his people on to attack and plunder another barbarian group named the Vandals. The Vandals, like all the barbarians in our story, have subgroups, and this sect of Vandals were called the Hasdingian. The Tvingi plundered the Vandal lands and turned around to head back to their territory. The Vandal king Vismar was killed, and most of his people applied for help from the Romans, and they were allowed to settle in Pannonia and become Roman citizens to escape our Tvingi friends. We'll be covering the Vandals again in our story at various points in much greater depth. Now, a bit of a side note on Gibberic. Gibberic's name includes the suffix Rick, which is supposed to mean Reek. His father was Hilderic, so he was also a Reek. But Ovida, Gibberic's grandfather, and his great-grandfather named Nadada did not have the suffix Rick. So if we are to believe our sources, this means that they were not Reeks. So we are shown then that the Goths had a somewhat fluid idea of what a ruler was, or at least it wasn't always hereditary. We will see the suffix Rick in almost all of our Gothic leaders throughout our story. There'll be some exceptions to this, but generally in crazy time periods of chaos for our Goths, those people that will not have Rick as their suffix may come up as leaders, and we will see that shortly when we get to our events around the Battle of Adrianople. Okay, so for the next couple of decades, until the late 360s, the Tvingi are going to continue to push their boundaries and influence, fueled by lucrative trade with the Roman Empire. Trade with the Romans is going to bring wealth to the Goths north of the Danube. We can find archaeological sites with Roman coins north of the Danube increased significantly in the 330s. The bronze Roman coins, which are used for trade and are the common currency, are found throughout the Tvingi-controlled lands. Glass, silver, high-quality wheel pottery were all crafts that would be centralized in an area and then distributed throughout Gothic and Roman areas for trade. Iron centers can be found near rivers where we have up to 15 smithies in operation, showing kind of an industrialization or a specialization of certain goods. The Romans would trade many types of goods with the Goths, including wine, foodstuffs, clothing, animals, and, of course, during this time period, slaves. Wine seems to be one of the more popular items, as many amphora, or vessels used for transporting many perishable goods at this time, including wine, can be found throughout the Tvingi lands. Now, silver coins are prevalent in some areas, which shows that these concentrations were probably the yearly payments made to the Reeks in the Tvingi lands. The silver coins are usually found in clusters far from the Danubian border region, closer to or in modern-day Moldova, which is where we can place many of our key reeks, at least their centers of influence. The silver coins would be sent to a reek, and he would hold on to them to use for advancement of power or influence, but not really to trade for goods. The bronze coins that the Romans used in trade, which can be found in many areas throughout the region, denoting easier access to that monetary unit. The silver were typically used as bullion or ways of holding wealth for the Romans, so they would use those for their yearly payments to the Goths. The trade with the Romans would begin to show more and more in Gothic culture at this time. The Dwingi would begin to take on certain aspects of Roman culture, but would still adhere to a large portion of their own. For example, the Dwingi would wear a short tunic called a sagrum. This would look similar to a Roman tunic. They would wear this with a girdle and wide, like, turned-down collars and short-sleeve shirts. But they wore many furs of animals, which would distinguish themselves, as fur would show a rise in rank in the social order. It appears that the elite Goths in general would wear furs that would include wolves and bears. Trousers to the ankles or just below the knees would certainly set them apart from their bare-legged Roman neighbors, though. They would wear an undergarment or underwear that would go down to the knees under all of these clothes. And then the men would oftentimes wear their long hair in something called a Subian knot, which looks kind of like a man bun, but on the side of the head, kind of up and a little bit behind the ear. We'll post some pictures of all of these things on the Facebook page to give you an idea, to give you some visuals of what this would look like. The disposition of the Goths were almost always something to the effect of friendly. Many people have written throughout history of the friendliness of the Goths. Now, they were considered tall, good-looking, blonde-haired, lighter complexion. They were considered brave, generous, and even difficult at times, though, chaste or unpretentious, and affectionate to family members and friends. It was said that they had a real zest for life, an enjoyment of community. They just really loved life. The Romans considered them to be unreliable when it came to upholding treaties, but we got to see this through the lens of the Romans, as they sometimes would not uphold their end of the bargain, and that could be then spun as the Goths, instead of responding to the Romans not upholding their end of the bargain, but as just being these barbarians. Now, when we talk about religion, this is where we're going to see a stronger Roman influence on the Goths. The Goths practice a pagan religion that was probably similar to the classic Norse or Germanic mythology, maybe somewhat related to the Vikings and other Germanic folks like the Saxons. We're going to delve into this a little bit more in next week's episode, but definitely was pagan and definitely had its roots in northern Norse-like mythology. There are many gods who worship for different things, and cults would rise up around these gods, and they would sometimes be associated with geographic areas. They perhaps practiced human sacrifice, which we're going to talk about one sacrifice in particular later on in our story of a leader named Ermeneric. Women and men both worked in temples, which does say something for the place of women in Gothic culture. The alphabet used letters called runes, but did not have much written material, alas, about their religious practices, because after they converted to Christianity, a very successful effort to erase all pagan past evidence was undertaken. So as the Goths started to convert to Christianity, they would be adherents to the Arian Christianity. And so, with the death of Valens at the Battle of Adrianople in 376, which we'll get to shortly in our story, and Theodosius's subsequent rise to emperor in the East, Arian Christianity began to decline. Theodosius pushed his Nicene Christianity, which is the form most people would recognize today, most Christians, which has the Father, Son, Holy Ghost idea version. Now, Arian, on the other hand, is God is the most powerful, and then the Son was created by him. So essentially, that's the main difference between Arian Christianity and Nicene Christianity, just how they describe the entity of God and what his different forms would be, so to speak. And it does sound like semantics, but it really mattered to these people back then, especially the Goths. It is interesting to consider why the Goths and many other Germanic barbarians converted to Arian Christianity as opposed to the Nicene Trinitarian version of Christianity. The Goths were pagans before, of course, but so were the Romans, who by this time, the majority had converted to the Nicene Creed or to the Nicene Christianity. So I'm interested in doing a whole episode on Gothic Christianity, and we're going to do a good portion of that next week. And we will talk about the pagan roots of the Goths. We'll talk about the Arian version of the Goths. And so I'm going to work on getting an interview with an expert on the subject. It won't be next week's episode, but it's hopefully going to be sometime in the future here, in the near future, to kind of parse out some of these more important aspects of why the Goths became Arians as opposed to the Roman Trinitarians or Nicene Creed Christians. In the meantime, I think the History of the Papacy podcast is an interesting show, and it may be able to parse out some of that information. So the Goths began to convert to Christianity in the early 4th century during the missionary campaign of a guy named Eupheilus, or Ufala, in the 330s and 340 CE especially. Now, we've talked about Ufala or Eupheilus before in the podcast, and I will devote an entire episode to him, starting with next week's episode, really, when we get into Gothic Christianity. But he became the instrument to the Gothic conversion. And he also would go on to play a large role in the Arian versus Nicene debate of early Christian church, which he is going to be an Arian. But as a review, Eupheilus was a grandson of a Cappadocian Greek taken as a slave during the Gothic raids of the 260s, and he lived in the Tervingian territory his whole life. He will be exiled, which we'll get into later on. Now, the Goths began to adhere to the Arian branch of Christianity quite quickly. By the time the Visigoths get to Italy in the early 5th century, we think that most were already converted. The fact that most of what we would call Goths converted to Christianity within 100 years or so is quite remarkable. Several other of our groups of barbarians would also make these quick transitions as they entered into the Roman Empire, which is a whole other idea that we will get into at various points in our story. Many of the Goths began to convert, but much to the chagrin of the Gothic leaders or older people of the Goths. The new young religion was seen as undercutting the old ways and the Gothic heritage, which explains the later persecution by Athanaric against Christians in the late 4th century. The Goths had faced many existential crises in the last 50 years of the 4th century, so when a culture is under attack, it is easy to circle those wagons around traditions and rituals that are embedded. And we will see this happen again in cultures many, many times. This should sound familiar to everyone. Anytime there's an assault of some sort, or what we perceive as an assault, a foreign assault for sure, culturally, we do see a circling of the wagons around traditions, around rituals. All kinds of ideas could be extrapolated and applied to areas of today in the United States, in Europe, all throughout history. So most of the Thuringii leadership who had remained pagan through the end of the 4th century, they agreed to convert to Christianity in order to settle in the Roman Empire, which that was a part of a negotiation that happened at various points, either with Valens or later on with the Ostrogoths. Much of the Thuringii peasants had already converted. I think that's enough background on Gothic conversion to Christianity for this week. So next week, we're going to take some time out to look at what religion or what ideas of religion the Goths had prior to their conversion to Christianity. And then we're going to get into a little more in depth to the actual conversion process for the Goths, including Ulfilas or Ulfila. And we're going to talk about the persecutions that happened against those early Christians. And then we'll preview the future conversion of all the Goths. We will wrap it up here for this week, as we've gotten a decent preview for next week's episode. And we would like to let you know that there are those images on Facebook of some of the clothing, some of the hairstyles of the Goths. There's some religious symbolism on there, so make sure you check that out. You can leave us a review on iTunes or Google Play or whatever podcast platform you use. Subscribe if you're interested in following along with us on this journey. And this is a work in progress, so leave some feedback. Get a hold of us on Twitter at History of the Barbarians or on Facebook. And again, be sure to check out those images on Facebook. And we will look forward to seeing you next week. Thanks for listening. See you next time.